Welcome to the Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. Hank is president of the Christian Research Institute, a ministry dedicated to proclaiming and defending the essential teachings of the historic Christian faith because life and truth matter. As our country observes Memorial Day, Hank and the entire staff here at CRI would like to extend our thanks and appreciation to those men and women who have served our nation in the military. Thank you for your sacrifice. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank invited urban apologist and author Vocab Malone to discuss Black Hebrew Israelism, urban apologetics, and the importance of being equipped with essential Christian doctrine. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Vocab Malone in their conversation.
I want to get into one of your specialties. You were talking about hip-hop at the beginning of this podcast. I think it was Napoleon who said, if I control the music of a culture, I care not who makes the laws of the culture. And when you think about the impact of Kendrick Lamar, or you think of Ice Cube or Public Enemy, I mean, they are pumping this kind of insidious theology into the ears of people, and that at a pretty brisk pace.
Right. So there's a time when the Nation of Islam dominated hip-hop, and that was in the late 80s, early 90s, and Ice Cube and Public Enemy would have been prime examples of that Nation of Islam theology. They were constantly sampling Farrakhan sermons in their music. Well, now we have Kendrick Lamar, and he has a pretty broad mainstream audience. I mean, when you're platinum, that means you have a big audience. So he's an example. However, there's other rappers who are turning on to this. There's a guy named Chingy. Chingy had a song a number of years ago called Right There. It employed St. Louis slang to talk about right there. That's how a St. Louis person supposed to say there. He's turned Hebrew Israelite. Another hip-hop artist named Kodak Black down in Florida has joined the Light in Zion Church. Now, he's been having legal troubles, and they've been supporting him through it. And so nobody really knows what's going on with Kodak Black, but there's all these pictures of him with the Star of David and all this type of stuff. So we're seeing this happen more and more. Now, I wouldn't want to give anyone the impression that there's rappers turning to Hebrew Israelism in the droves, but you do hear a new story about it more frequently than you would realize, or you see someone who has contacts with Hebrew Israelites more frequently than you would realize. And there's a whole underground genre filled with Hebrew Israelite rappers. Now, granted, most of them don't have mainstream success, but if you want to only listen to Hebrew Israelite rap, Hebrew Israelite R&B, and you're a Hebrew Israelite, you could steady do it. There's enough artists out there. Once you start finding the YouTube videos of these guys, you're shocked at how many they are. I mean, there's a song called Fringes. It's all about wearing your fringes.
And it really gets into the broader mainstream culture as well. I have 12 kids, so I know a little bit about this. And a lot of younger kids are listening to these rappers, and then they're kind of picking up the theology by osmosis.
Yes, yes. And the weird thing is, it seems like these camps are influencing some of the rap artists, and then some of the rap artists are putting in their lyrics. But what it is these camps have a much stronger street credibility and presence than the average person who doesn't live in a downtown area or whatever realizes. And so I can tell you an anecdote from my own journey in this. When I first started interacting with camps, Hebrews like camps on the street, a number of years ago, I think maybe 9 years ago was one of the first times. And then I had a number of interactions about 5 years ago. And then recently, the past 2 years really amped it up. Just in the past 2 years, in the city of Phoenix, two things have happened. They've went from two gatherings every Saturday to five. So in my city, it's went from two camps to five camps. Number one. Number two, the size of the camps has increased. Some of these used to have two or three guys. Now they'll have six or seven, sometimes eight or nine. Some of them have 12 to 15, one particular group. And it's hard to believe. And here's the weirdest thing. When I first started doing this, the crowds, the people passing by in the city, they were relatively hostile to these groups. It was clear the average pedestrian, whatever their race was, viewed them kind of as a nuisance. However, through a process of attrition and basically showing up every Saturday, I went back out there a month ago. I could not believe how the crowd had turned against me. The first interactions a couple years ago I had, it was clear the crowd was sort of with me, even though they weren't really Christians, just because they were tired of Hebrew Israelites yelling at them. This time, there were people there just to listen to these Hebrew Israelites. I got threatened several times. It was a chaos I could not believe. And it was because the crowd's attitude has changed. And there's an anger and a rage that wasn't at the same level it is now that results in people looking at these guys like, you know what? Maybe these guys do have the answer. And if someone's there bothering them, they must be stopping something good. So I'm going to go stop that person. And that's exactly what happened to me. The camp, they didn't have to try to stop me. It was all pedestrian. Well, when I say pedestrians, I mean people who were there listening, physically getting in my face and intimidating me. It was wild.
Talk about some of the social dynamics here, because, I mean, you have fewer and fewer people who are biblically literate, historically literate. You just talked about this rage, this angst, this anger that's building up in a lot of different communities around the country. How all of that feeds together into maybe the broad mouth of a funnel, feeding into these kind of groups.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Now, I ask people not to laugh at this because you got to understand the person I'm mentioning is a real person with real needs made in the image of God, searching for real answers. I talked to a Hebrew Israelite once, and he was very conversational. I said, "How did you get into this?" He said, "I was watching the news, saw another cop shooting, and I was frustrated by the plight of my people. I went online looking for answers because I had no one else to ask, and I Googled," this is literally what he told me, "I Googled, why are black people suffering in America?" Guess what kind of websites he ended up on? Hebrew Israelites. Guess what religion he ascribes to now? Hebrew Israelism. People don't understand. Hebrew Israelism is a theodicy. It explains the plight of black Americans in the Western – well, it explains the plight of people who are of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. It explains the slave trade. God brought that upon us because we were not keeping the law, statutes, and commandments. And now he's reawakening his people. Now we got to keep these laws, statutes, and commandments, build a nation to get ready for his return, because we're going to be in charge of this new nation. And so you're part of that, my young brother. That's why you start off. And you get these ranks like soldier and captain and general and all that. That's why that's part of the reason for that. So that's sort of how it works.
You know, you're obviously a very passionate guy. Think about if you're lying on your deathbed, what you'd want your legacy to be. I mean, what's your burning passion? What would you like to accomplish in your lifetime?
Well, to be honest, you know, there's times when I've been involved with ministry and I look back at my own motivations. I say, you know what? I was doing apologetics just because I wanted people to think I was smart, or because I wanted to, you know, but more and more, and just, I don't know, the older you get, you have kids, all this, you realize just how important it is to leave a lasting imprint. And the only way to do that is by pointing people to something that's eternal. And so I know it sounds maybe highfalutin, but really, I want what I do to really reflect the glory of God. And lately, more and more, God's been dealing with me on that, because as I do apologetics, it's easy to forget about really what is your own personal walk and you know, your holiness and your heart and all that. And so my point is that I don't want it only to be external. You know, I worry or have a fear in my own life that, okay, you can do this, you can write a book, you can go on the radio, but that doesn't mean you're close with the Lord how you should be. And so I really am trying to work by God's grace to tie those things together in a new way where it's clear and evident and true who I am, but I'm not there yet. So I would like people to say vocab cared about God's glory, and I can see it in his private and public life in every way. And God, I think, is going to get me there.
I love it. You know, you mentioned this, and I think you ought to expand on this a little bit, because you hit the nail right on the head. Apologetics is a very, very dangerous thing, because as you start to learn to give cogent answers to people, you can use that as a hammer, as opposed to seeing this as a method by which you can lead people to the foot of the cross, you can sort of be puffed up with your own arrogance and you can become very, very proud. It's a very big tendency for the apologist. Mm-hmm. You start to learn a few answers to questions and boy, oh boy, you're doing that to show people just how smart you are. And then it becomes all about you as opposed to the glory of God.
Yeah, it's really scary. I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts, you know, now in the future, because, you know, you've been doing it for a long time. And I mean, it seems like you would know the struggle, but it is something that, to be honest, yeah, scares me. But yeah, I'll tell you one thing that makes a big difference, Hank, being connected to a local church. They keep, I mean, it's one of God's instruments, and he keeps you humble with that. That, you know, when you're, when someone's yelling at you, or it's just, it really helps to keep you humble. And so I am glad for that has been a constant in my life by God's grace.
Well, I think that's right on. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. The other thing you mentioned is a great insight. You got to see everybody that you're talking to is made in the image and likeness of God and therefore having intrinsic worth.
Yeah, and that's true. And I will tell you this, though. Now, someone hears this and then they see maybe sometimes, I'm not talking about everyone involved in this field because I'm not them, I'm me, but sometimes you might see something I'll do or say online. Now, it could be me making a mistake, you know, being too aggressive or assertive or something like that. Or it also could be this, and I'm not making excuses for things, but I do want people to know this is a very contextual area. What I mean by that is there's different expectations, things that are kind of allowed or expected or understood that are, it's different than going to a university and debating your professor. Now, to me, I have a lot more fun because of the rules of the game. They're kind of unwritten in urban apologetics, but the rules are somewhat different. I'm not talking about moral issues. I don't mean that like it's acceptable to do things that are immoral or anything like that, but I'm just saying sort of maybe what you might call social norms or protocol that are sort of conventions. They're different within this area, and so there's sometimes a level of like boldness or confidence or assertiveness or almost polemical, like really polemical types of things you might see myself or some of us do, that you may say, that's odd. Would a person involved in academia do that? And within the context, it's understood. Sort of like, now I'm not making an exact parallel, J. Smith and Islam. Now, everyone may not agree with what he does. I personally do, as far as what I understand about what he does out in there in London. There's some contextuality to his apologetic approach. There's something similar with what we do. Here's what I mean, and this is the last thing I'll say on this. Dealing with Hebrew Israelites is not like dealing with Mormons. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm. So you have to use a particular rhetorical flourish to get through in the conversation.
Now, I don't, yeah. Now, I don't mean cheap arguments, and I don't mean substituting rhetoric, but there's different things that are allowed. For example, the use of humor is allowed in certain ways, a passion that's on display, and even entertainment. What I mean by that is we're working on some skits, and these skits are apologetic skits. And you may watch it and say, well, it seems like you're making fun of these guys, but we're trying to really design it to poke holes in the fallacy in a different way, because I'll be real frank. I've noticed that pointing out logical fallacies to the average Hebrew Israelite literally means nothing to them. Mm-hmm. They don't connect the dots that it's a logical fallacy, to be honest. They just say you're philosophizing vocab. And I feel like these skits might be a different didactic tool to do it. So I'm going to be putting out some skits that kind of poke fun at some Hebrew Israelite doctrines, not to make fun of people, but to make fun of some of their doctrines and the habits that the doctrines create.
Are there a lot of people like you doing what you're doing within the urban community?
Yes, and I'm in a lot of ways a latecomer. I came to this and I found out there was guys doing it since the 90s. And now when I talk about doing it, I mean specifically Hebrew Israelite-related apologetics. Now, I mentioned earlier, I'm just jumping on a train as far as urban apologetics that's been around a while. Just a lot of people don't always know the names. But, I mean, even pastors have engaged in this. You know, a pastor in Oak Cliff area, you know, Tony Evans, for example. I mean, he has always has an apologetic bent, for example. But nonetheless, there are people now more and more. When I first started getting active, I didn't realize it, but the internet has connected us. And what's happened is some of the mainstream apologists are starting to get involved as well. So there's becoming a little bit of a synergy between kind of this underground network of urban apologists with some of the mainstream apologists, and it's been pretty cool to see. So specifically, Michael Brown is involved with this. James White is involved with this. To a lesser extent, Michael Heiser, I'm not saying I agree with everything Michael Heiser says, but to a lesser extent, he's involved with this in some ways. There's other apologists who are just supporting in sort of backdrop ways, like David Wood. So there's a number of people who are kind of, you know, pushing us, egging us on, encouraging us from the sort of mainstream world of apologetics as well. But the answer is yes. There are a lot of people in this, and some are much more skilled in it. I just happen to be the guy who sometimes people call to do an interview or something, but it doesn't mean I'm necessarily the best out of all of us. There's a guy I know who knows their history better than most of them know it, and he's an amazing resource. I mentioned him several times in the book, for example. Another guy who's like a walking exegetical refutation of all their eisegesis, you know? So yes, there are others, and I give them a shout out when I see them.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with urban apologist and author Vocab Malone. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's flagship publication designed to equip you in doctrine, defense, and discernment. When you subscribe to the journal, you'll be receiving a publication that is not only scholarly in its substance, but beautiful in its award-winning presentation. Easily accessible and relevant, with stunning graphics and rich content written by respected apologists, theologians, and social commentators, the Christian Research Journal is a must-have resource that no Christian home should be without. Start your subscription today. Call 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. We'll return with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast in just a few moments. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI, and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. As an organ of the Christian Research Institute, the Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ and helping followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In a post-truth age of subjectivism and relativism, many Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of sacred scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his special guest, Vocab Malone, in their conversation.
You're not just dealing with the black Hebrew Israelites, you're also dealing with Muslims. Talk about that.
Yeah, Islam has really always been a passion too, and I just can't stay away from it as well. And I enjoy it. Sometimes I'm in over my head because Islam is such a massive topic. But nonetheless, I've done some debates with some Muslim apologists. And, you know, God has been teaching me the past year to kind of keep that apologetic bent, but to really start to, I'm not saying I'm the expert, you know, but to deal with Muslims on a local level, on a personal level more and more. And I'll give you an example. I go to an Arabic-speaking church. Now, myself, I am not Arabic by background. I'm not Middle Eastern. I'm part Italian. But what it is I go there as a way to reach out to Muslim refugees in Phoenix. So I've been involved with ESL classes for the Syrian refugees here in Phoenix because there's a lot of them. I've been involved with some things like that more and more. And it just opens your eyes to the wide variety and spectrum of Islam in the United States. And I think it's okay to do both. It's okay to bring some detergent and bleach to new refugees in the United States, and also the next day debate a Muslim on is the Quran reliable. And I'm trying to learn how to do both those things.
And atheists, you're debating atheists.
Yes, not as much these days, but it still pops up every now and then. And also because I'm involved with I mentioned David Wood and another apologist named Anthony Rogers and another apologist named John McCrae, who John McCrae does this awesome channel called What Do You Meme? M-E-M-E, Hank. And what he does is he deconstructs all the memes on the internet with apologetics. It's amazing what he does. And so I work with them to produce apologetic skits. And we just did this apologetic skit on John's channel. And what it was is the atheists, everything they were saying was actually just echoing a meme from the internet. For those who don't know, a meme is an image with words on top and bottom that portray some snappy or witty idea. And the memes we're talking about are ones critical of Christianity. Mm. And so we did a skit where we showed how some atheists just basically echo memes that they found on the internet. And so I'm doing some different type of apologetics, kind of like trying to be culturally relevant, kind of entertainment, but yet still touching on the key issues apologetics. And all that. But, you know, I debated Richard Carrier once. That's probably the biggest atheist I debated. And some of my studies in that Christ myth theory have been helpful in dealing with some of this, some of these issues I've been finding in the urban community as well. So, yeah.
You're spending a lot of time pursuing education. What's the goal there?
Well, I'm working on a D-Min, but this apologetic venture has caused me for the past year to put it on hold. So I'm already done with all of my residency aspect of the program there at Talbot, but I've got to finish my project, the doctoral project. And what it is giving people practical solutions for Hebrew Israelism as it invades their city and area. And so the goal is by the end of the year to be back beginning on the project proper, because that's the only phase I have left.
The title of your book, Barack Obama versus the Black Hebrew Israelites, Introduction to the Beliefs and Practices of West Hebrew Israelism. Unpack that for me. What's going on there?
Right. So Netflix came out with a biopic, I think they call them, of President Barack Obama when he was 21 years old. And I heard there was a scene in this 2016 movie called Barry. There was a scene where he was portrayed as debating Hebrew Israelites on the streets of New York. So I watched the movie, found the scene, was fascinated by it. I mean, what an interesting idea that a young Obama would be debating Hebrew Israelites while he was a student at Columbia. And I said, you know, that's epic right there. That is the controversial, catchy title for a book.
So that's the hook.
Yes.
It's the hook for the book.
Yeah, so what I do is I take the conversation and I use it as a launching pad to discuss the larger beliefs. So just so everyone knows, the book is not about Barack Obama. But what I do is I take that scene and I take the dialogue and I deconstruct it and I use it to launch into the topic. So what I try to do there is not just a gimmick. I try to take the familiar to help people explore the unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. So why West Hebrew Israelism as opposed to Black Hebrew Israelism?
So we like to use Hebrew Israelism because it describes an ideology and it doesn't give them the satisfaction of thinking that we're actually calling them Hebrew or Israelites. Mm. So that's one reason I like the phrase Hebrew Israelism, number one. Number two, One West is a specific variety. Now, why is it called One West? Here's why. I mentioned earlier, 1969. See, that's when this key school began. And the school was called Israelite School of Universal Practical Knowledge. And their address when they were the most prominent was at One West, 120 Fifth Street in Harlem, New York. Now, it since has become an Applebee's restaurant because that area of Harlem has become what's sometimes called gentrified. Nonetheless, One West is still a way to describe the ideological descendants of the ideas that were hashed out in those three decades there at that address.
Do you have some good examples of people that have come out of Black Hebrew Israelism or some variety of it, come to faith in Christ and now is going through some kind of discipleship process within the church?
Yeah, so I'll mention two. There's way more than two, but I got to mention people that have already went public. One is a guy named Marcus, and I'll just call him Marcus for now. He was not just your average member. He was what's called an officer. He was a camp officer of IUIC, Virginia. He was essentially the head of their school there. He was in it for 7 years with his twin brother, actually. Well, over a process, the Lord showed him the error of that, and about a year later, he came to a saving faith in Jesus Christ. And one of the key turning points in his conversion was this. A Christian who was well-equipped confronted their camp one Saturday when they were out on the street. And Marcus told me, he said, now, vocab, I knew the group dynamics. I knew how to shout him down and get my guys with me to overpower him and have him not really be able to say anything else. But I was always impressed with how he knew the word, and I never forgot some of the stuff he said. It stuck with me. And so that conversation, even though the guy, whoever this person is, would have never known it, but that was instrumental in Marcus leaving this religion. And so I encourage people with that, because sometimes you may feel like you're talking to a brick wall, but the group dynamics may be in play if you're out in a street scenario. And so he's an example.
Is violence a big threat when you're involved in this urban apologetics?
If you're online on a regular basis engaging with the Hebrew Israelites and you start to become a pebble in their shoe, threats of violence are commonplace. And I'm not trying to exaggerate, but it's just, I mean, it's weekly, you know. I mean, I can't even make up some of the stuff they've said to me. Probably the most memorable of all time was this one. A guy says, if you have a daughter, I hope she's kidnapped and raped to death. Hmm. And I thought, that is wickedly creative. You know, not just killed, but she's got to be kidnapped first. And then not just murdered, but raped till she dies. I said, wow. You know, I know people may say, how can you make a joke about it? But you've got to have a certain level of, water off your back like a duck if you're going to deal in this area. So I said, wow, that's wickedly creative. And I never forgot that one. So threats of violence all the time. Now, if you're out on the street and engaging them, historically, I would have said no. Because historically, they generally may get loud. They may say you're going to go into slavery in the future. They may, say all that stuff. But generally, it's hands off. However, two things have happened that I've seen. One is, I mentioned this earlier, the crowds are starting to turn in their favor. And what has that resulted in? The Hebrew Israelites have no problem encouraging the crowds to violence. And I've seen it firsthand. Now, had there been riots and all that? No, I'm not saying anything like that. But there's videos online, and I almost experienced it myself, where they encourage some bystanders to basically deal with interlocutors. Hmm. Now, granted, a lot of these interlocutors were drunk folks who started saying racist stuff or people who were really out of line. But it makes no excuse for, what happened to them next. And these Hebrew Israelites will encourage it, and they'll say, praise Yahweh Shai for sending us guardian angels. You know, these guys who just, punched a guy in the jaw a couple times and then left, that type of thing. The other thing I've seen happen is that the camps have grown in number on the street. They become a little more aggressive and emboldened. And so they are a little more likely to try to use physical space to intimidate you. Maybe not directly laying hands on me yet, but doing everything just short of it to basically say, don't ever come back to this corner again, vocab.
Yeah.
So it is getting worse, but historically, we have not seen this happen. This is no Salafi Islam. This is no militant Islam as far as acts of violence being perpetuated upon society or individuals. It's not yet. That doesn't mean you can't find instances, but I try to be fair to them when I answer that question.
First Arabic Baptist, Arizona. This sounds like a great church.
Well, it's a small church, but it's a very unique church. It's a Southern Baptist church that is bilingual. The pastor was born in Nazareth, became a Christian in the United States, and has been in ministry for 30 years or so now. And, it's just amazing to be amongst Middle Eastern Christians. So we have folks from Syria, Iraq, folks who are Assyrian, Assyrian, which there's no country for Assyrians, technically speaking. We have Egyptian Christians we work with. And it's just really a unique setting, really unique context. And it's a beautiful thing to see and be a part of. So I'm just learning there while I'm there. And I'm just serving like you would in any other church. And it's a perfect place, as you could probably imagine, to do outreach at a local level to Muslims. And that's something that our church has been able to partner with other churches and do. In fact, last weekend, we just did a Muslim evangelism conference, and it just turned out really well, equipping Christians with witnessing to Muslims. And it was a great conference, and we even had some Messianic Jews who were involved. So there's different people of different backgrounds getting involved with ministry to Muslims, and it's been beautiful to see. And that's pretty much what we do at First Arabic Baptist.
And it sounds like he would understand the plight of the Palestinians better than pretty much anybody else in an American church. An American context.
Yeah, there's some articles online where you can see him registering a voice within the SBC. I'm trying to use my words carefully here, about support going one way or another as far as Middle Eastern matters. And he just wants to make sure that there's a voice and awareness for the Arabic and Middle Eastern Christians in that part of the world as well, and that they're supported, because they certainly are part of the persecuted church.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with urban apologist and author Vocab Malone in just a few moments. Probing today's religious movements, promoting doctrinal discernment and critical thinking, and providing reasons for faith and ethics, the Christian Research Journal is an award-winning publication that no Christian should be without. Be prepared with the knowledge you need to defend the faith. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. We'll be right back with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We live by a fudge factor, seeing our value and our achievements as greater than they really are. God, however, sees us as we actually are. Sinful, irrational beings willing to cheat and lie to ourselves, exaggerating our accomplishments to others. Despite our faults, God also views us as inherently valuable, based not on our flawed image, but on Christ's perfect one. Be sure to read Lying to Ourselves, Why We Cheat by Richard Pupard in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal. Subscribe today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank's conversation with urban apologist Vocab Malone.
A lot of people listening in. Anything else you'd like to let them know?
Well, I am very, very glad to be able to talk to you. And I mean, I'd love one day to interview you, you know, I mean, it's part of my apologetics journey, certainly has to do with, staying in the car late nights or whenever it was broadcast to you on the air and the different people you'd interview. And so, I appreciate that. And of course, the magazine, which has been an amazing blessing. I subscribe to it now, but during times when I couldn't afford it, I would always go in the seminary library and make sure I saw what was going on with the latest issues. So really appreciate that, as well as the website. You know, I've always been going on equip.org, downloading the PDFs, reading through things, just a lot of resources. So I appreciate it. I'm glad to be on here. Maybe I'll ask this. I know it's an odd thing, but right before I got on with you, a pastor that I respect reached out to me and said, "Vocab, you need to get on a book refuting this doctrine." And it made me think, because see, Hank, my book that I've got out really is a primer. It doesn't really refute a lot of their doctrine. It just explains it, because there's such a learning curve with this mysterious religion. And my thought was to do an update of it, where I update it and make it better and comprehensive, but still just an understanding Hebrew Israelite type of book. This text message just made me start thinking, Should I not do that now? And should I really start getting into the refutation phase of this? Because that's going to be a real labor of love to really systematize that. Do I have time in my life? I just feel like it's a decision I got to look at about the next steps to take within this area. Because the reason why is because there's nothing there. So my book's not the best. It's just the first. It's just the only one that exists. And so people are saying, well, now you need to do some refutation, because people still don't really have all the answers they need. And so I just feel honestly overwhelmed. So I guess pray for wise decisions and these decisions that need to be made, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really would encourage you in that direction. What I've tried to do is I've always tried to take the plumb line and make that plumb line essential Christian doctrine. You know, Oz Guinness once said that if you compare something, then you'll have clarity. So you want to always have the straight stick of essential Christian doctrine, and then you'll see the crookedness of whatever you're comparing it to by comparison. So contrast becomes the mother of clarity. And you do two things there. The one thing you do is people become very, very familiar with the truth. And again, when you're familiar with the truth, then you can see the counterfeit by comparing the straight.
Maybe that is the way. I'm listening. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, fine. Look at my book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. And in that book, you'll find the last M. I use the acronym Muslim. So I talk about Muhammad, his life and his legacy. Then I talk about the U, which is unreliable revelations, the principal unreliable revelation being the Quran, and then the S is Sharia, you know, the idea that Sharia is state and state is Sharia. The L is the Levant, sort of what we're talking about with your pastor, you know, the whole area from Anatolia down to Egypt, you know, where incidentally Christians are facing mass genocide, which is squarely in the blind spot of the West. The I stands for the Islamic State, not just as a terrorist group, but an end-time caliphate. And then the last M stands for major Muslim misapprehensions. And that's where I really use this idea of taking essential Christian doctrine, and that becomes the plumb line. So, for example, I start with the deity of Jesus Christ, because virtually every single theological heresy begins with a misconception of the nature of God. So I start with the acronym doctrine. The D stands for deity of Jesus Christ. And now I say, this is what we believe when it comes to the deity of Jesus Christ as Christians. But here's what Muslims will say. For example, if you say that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, you've committed the unforgivable sin of shirk. So I go through the list of essential Christian doctrines, and now you have the straight stick of comparison and you have the counterfeit.
Maybe that, I'm just, again, thinking out loud, maybe I could do something like that with the words One West, O-N-E-W-E-S-T, or something like that. That might be an interesting approach. If I do it, I'll say, Hank Hanegraaff got me thinking about this.
Well, I love acronyms. I mean, I use acronyms because it gives people a grid by which they can remember what you say. So even Muslim, as I just mentioned, that's the title of my book, but it's also an acronym to give you a handle on something that's really big. You mentioned your debates and you realize, wow, I'm in over my head because it's a big subject. But this gives you kind of the overall perspective. It gives you a handle on it. And that's what people need. They need handles. Because it's one thing for you to become very conversant and adept at what you do. It's very, very hard to get someone else to become adept at it as well. You spend a lot of time at this. So you got to give them handles, because if they don't have the handles, then they can't do what you do. And, you know, you're just one person. You got to multiply yourself.
Yeah. See, that's strategically, I've been thinking and talking with others about that too. you know, again, your website, the website of CRI is called Equip, equip.org, the equipping phase. So I believe we've put some tools in the hands of people to equip them with what the Hebrew Israelites believe, but we haven't yet fully put in their hands a tool to equip them with how to refute a lot of what the Hebrew Israelites believe. And so I'm really thinking about what you're saying.
But again, the way to do that is to make them so familiar with the truth. Because,
right.
you know, just when you think about Black Hebrew Israelism, one of the things you pointed out in this podcast is that there are so many varieties. Mm-hmm. And even as good as you are, you can't keep up with all of the different permutations.
Right.
I mean, Satan never presents evil in its naked deformity, because if he did, no one would buy into it. So he keeps packaging and repackaging the lie in all kinds of very tantalizing ways. And it's very, very hard to keep up with it. It's hard for me to keep up with all the permeations of Islam. You know, so what you have to do is you have to always think, I got to focus on the essentials and make that the plumb line by which I make the comparison. So if I were to do it, I would use the acronym DOCTRINE. By the way, just deity of Jesus Christ, original sin, canon, Trinity, resurrection, incarnation, new creation, eschatology. So that becomes my grid. And I take Black Hebrew Israelism and I compare, what do they say about the deity of Jesus Christ? I always start with that because it's not only the deity and doctrine, but virtually every single theological heresy begins with the misconception of the nature of God. So I'd start with that. Here's what they say with respect to the deity of Jesus Christ. Here's their view of Jesus Christ. And then the doctrine of original sin. I mean, how are you going to deal with the problem of sin? Are you going to deal with it through being a Judaizer, or are you going to deal with it by saying that Christ is the answer? The canon. You mentioned some ideas they have with respect to the canon. So it's a way of saying, well, this is the infallible repository for redemptive revelation, but here's what the Black Hebrew Israelites say. The Trinity. Here's what they say. Here's what biblical orthodoxy holds with respect to the Trinity, resurrection, etc. So that's kind of how I'd go through it, but I'm sure you have a creative way of coming up with this as well.
I don't know, Hank. It sounds like we need to write a book together on Hebrew Israelites. You'll take the doctrine side and I'll do the one West side.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll do it. But I mean, I think that I will tell you something. I think this is really an important issue. I think it's a really important issue. What you're into and your ability to communicate, you've got an incredible ability to communicate. What you're into is really significant. I mean, this is significant on a macro level. I mean, in some ways you can look at this as being, well, you know, this is just a little thing I'm doing. No, this is really big. I think what's going on in the urban communities has the potential for lighting a powder keg in the West. And so I think you're into something important.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, this has been a very, you know, this part right here is a very, like, just a blessing of a conversation. I mean, I'm not just saying, I do got some, you know, thinking to do and figuring this all out and going through this and a kind of a next step to take. But,
well, I'll look you up when I come to Arizona. I go there, you know, a few times a year at least.
You know what? This is a true story. The reason why I ended up in Phoenix Seminary is because you came and spoke in Phoenix when you put out the Apocalypse Code. Because what happened was, I listened to the show all the time, heard you coming to Phoenix, and it was at, might have been Bethany Bible Church, if I'm not mistaken. And you spoke on the Apocalypse Code, and in the lobby were some Phoenix Seminary recruiters, and I told them about my education that I had up at that point, and I didn't think I was qualified yet for seminary, and they explained how I was and could be. And so I stopped going to the community college I was at, and enrolled from that conversation because they were in the lobby when you came to speak. And I always thought that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm glad I got to hear Hank, but I think it's like a big part of the reason I ended up going to hear you speak is because then I met the Phoenix Seminary folks, and that's how I got, you know, through seminary as far as step one. So it was kind of a neat thing, but that's how it happened.
That is too cool. I'm glad you shared that as well.
Yeah. So you never know, like, the little things that, you know, it could happen, you know, because I would have never called them because I thought I was unqualified as far as my prior academics. But I happened to see them, had a conversation. There we go. So, yeah, that was cool.
Well, I hope we have many other opportunities to intersect. I'm really impressed with your knowledge about this particular movement and your ability to communicate it. I think you got the idea of the dangers of apologetics. If all you have is a hammer, everything becomes a nail, right?
Right.
So you want to pound people instead of reaching them. And you have to see apologetics as a handmaiden to evangelism. It's always a means to an end. God using your well-reasoned answer as a springboard or an opportunity. And I'm really glad that you're a vital reproducing member within a healthy body of believers. That's critically important. I think it's very important to understand the Middle Eastern context as well. I think it relates to what you're doing. So I think it's good for you to be in an Arabic context within the body of Christ. I think you got a lot of stuff going on that's on point.
Well, I appreciate that. And I will tell Pastor Jamal, the Bible Answer Man radio show host, Hank Hanegraaff said hi.
I would love to talk to him someday. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and eschatology is a passion of mine. And I spoke in the West Bank not all that long ago about the fault lines that run through Christian Zionism.
Yeah, he likes your stuff on eschatology. From what I've seen, he actually really likes that stuff that you have on eschatology.
Well, love to talk to him sometime. And, you know, you've been fantastic in this podcast. I promise people all the time I'm going to bring them some of the most interesting, informative, inspirational people on the planet. And you are definitely not an exception. I'm really glad I did this podcast with you.
Thank you so much, Hank. Thank you so much.
You got it, my brother. Godspeed to you. And for everybody listening in, you have an action step to take as well, and that is to go to iTunes and give this podcast a 5-star rating. When you do that, this will bring the podcast to more and more people all over the planet. If you look at the guests that I have interviewed for the podcast or had conversations with, these are really interesting people that you need to know, and my passion is bringing them to you through conversations, not in a didactic, lean forward, in the studio fashion, but rather in a laid back, in the study kind of conversation. I hope you've enjoyed Vocab. He's someone who's making a difference for time and for eternity. Pray for him. He needs your prayers, and we'll pray for you and look forward to seeing you next time on another Hank Unplugged.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with urban Christian apologist Vocab Malone in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. To get a biblical perspective on current events, religious movements, and cultural trends, and gain the discernment skills you need to defend your faith, subscribe to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to the Christian Research Institute at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdul Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.